worked a train, fired a train to Blackpool. And at Blackpool there, we were coming over on the cushions as we were coming back by train. We took the engine on the shed, and then I came back, got on the train. So I got into the train was getting packed with troops and everything like that. And so I got in there in the compartment next to the engine, which was a guard's break. I thought, so I sit there. And that was it. And as we got further down, we got to crew, and the people got on, like, and an old man come along, so I gave him his seat, and I just laid on the deck of the floor with all the others, like, and that's it. Then we went to sleep. Next thing, we heard this thump, and I wondered what it was. You could taste and smell cordite, and I thought to myself, what's up here? There was no screams or anything like that, or anything, we come to a stand. I got up and I looked out and I thought, it's bloody Queen's Park. Then it came along and he said, they've dropped a landmine at Queen's Park, half a mile away. The landmine was one of them sort that had a half a mile devastation. So we stood there. They said, keep on your train there. And I looked at the engine and the fireman's down there, and he said, I don't know what's happened. He said, the train just come up to a halt, like, you know, so we got off. So the long story then is, I thought, well, what's taking place? And if everybody all right? Yeah, I said, there's this bloody cordite. I thought, oh, bloody hell. But then we got to Euston, and when we came into number one platform, there was, I think, reason about 25 ambulances all on number one, all lined up. We thought, what the bloody hell's the matter? So when we come to a stand at Euston, we all got out. There was all the ARP, the St John's ambulance there. I got out and she called me over. She said, hold on a minute. She said, how are you? I said, I'm all right, thank you. She put her finger up. She said, do you feel all right? I said, yes. I said, what's up? She said, well, be careful as you go along up the train, she said. And then when I went up there and I got halfway up the train, there was 15 coaches, and I said, there was five coaches with the windows blown out, and this is it. And I said from there, as I'm walking along with me, in fact, going to walk back to Camden Depot, and I said to him on the platform, oh, come along, we've arrived now. I said, you're on the right date, no windows in there. And the AFP said, don't talk to them. He said, they're gone. They're all dead. They've all, like, Madame Tussauds, waxworks. All what they were doing at the time when that explosion took place, there was no blood or anything. They were just like figures in the cake there.
And how many of them were there?
115 died there. Five coaches were blown. All the windows were blown out. And that was it.
And it didn't take the train off the track?
Oh, no, that's when it blown up there. Then they just pulled the train into Euston from Queen's Park.
But what I mean is the explosion didn't knock the train off.
Oh, no. It just blasted all the windows. All the windows are gone. And it was just like, well, how can I say that? And it was over there. They just sat there. If you was like that and you were like that talking to somebody, that's how you died. And the children there, all the thing. And it was this old waxworks like.
And you didn't realise that till you got walking.
Well,
walking
as I'm walking towards them, I see them there and I just glanced and I said, we've arrived now. The ARP people come along. He said, no good talking, mate. He said, they're gone.
And was it in the middle of the train or were at the end of the train?
In the middle of the train, yeah.
So there were people alive at the back of the train?
Oh, yeah. Well, he was in the front coach, like, and the second coach and the third coach. That was all right. A bit shook there, you know, but we was, well, I say we could smell it. So this cordite was coming, I suppose, from the other bloody coaches. So...
And there was so these five coaches were the dead people, and then about three or four
coaches beyond that, which were okay, that had missed the blast.
And how do you know it was that number of people that died?
Well, that's what came over, it was in the papers and everything, that's how we found, you know. There was about 25 ambulances, and they came, oh, they had the stretchers out there, and they were... Well, they were about to take the people. How they got them out, I don't know. But when I got up to Camden Shed, it was a wonderful moment. Because, I walked up the blooming track like, and I got there, and one of the lads said, "It's Scotty." I said, "You got off that train, that Blackpool train?" I said, "Yeah." "Christ," he said, "you're right, are you?" I said, "Yeah, well, yeah, I'm all right." I said, "But there's five coaches there." I said, "They're all dead," he said. And he said, "Yeah, we know that, we've heard it." He said, "We thought you was one of them there, you know, because you came back," he said. "And you came back from Blackpool. We knew you went to Blackpool, like, you know, so."
And what about the train crew? Were they all right, the firemen and the...
Firemen were shook up a little bit, but they were all right, like. Oh, yeah. The fire blew out the firebox when it happened, the blast, like I called him, like, but it didn't do any damage, like, but... No, it was mostly the middle of the train that really caught it, you know.
Right. So yeah. That's what made the train stop then? It was the fact that the bomber went off?
Oh, of course. Well, that done everything, because people like there, and I don't know whether it was the guard applied the brake or whether it was the driver applied the brake, you right. see.
But, so they didn't stop trains then when there was an air raid on?
Oh, no, 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 no. Not really, like, you know. Oh, nothing stopped. Episode that happened during the war. We were leaving Liverpool at about 11:50 at night. The trains were packed, troops and everything, 700 people, but made our way, yeah, no problem there, it was dark and everything, but then we got the crew, stopped there, picked up passengers, put down, and we come along, come to the first water pickup, put the scoop down. And as I filled up there, we got to the top, we overfilled a bit, and we heard this scream in the night. My mate says to me, "Alec," he said, "stop larking about." He says, "Bloody horrible." And I said, "That wasn't me." I said, you know. Then the second time we picked up another water hose we come to, the same thing happened again. And the scream come out, and I said to my mate, "Well," I said, "that wasn't me, was it?" "What the bloody hell is it?" he said. On the third one, we picked up again, and we heard this bloody scream again. We said, "What the bloody hell was going on?" Well, we decided then the coal was getting low on the foot plate, so I knocked the doors down, and I looked inside. There was a body laying in the line on the coals, you see. I was going to bring some coal forward. Then I walked in, and I said, "Me mate, is it? It's a dead body." He said, "Well, I'll leave it with you, Alec, you see. We're very brave, you see." So, and it was an American technical sergeant. We used to call them testicle sergeants, but we call him technical sergeant. He laid down on the floor, and I looked at him. He was alive, like, you see. And I said, "What are you doing here?" And he said, "Oh, Jesus Christ," he said. "What a game I've had there." And so we got him onto the footplate, took all his coat. He was covered in bloody coal dust and everything. He said to me, "Jesus, what again?" I said, "Come on," I said, "get them clothes off, because you're soaking wet." So we had spare overalls on and a bib and brace and everything. We had an old jacket there, so we put them on him. And as we go and hung all these other uniforms, like, on the boiler front, you know, still going along. And
how'd he got in the tender in the first place?
Ah, well, this is it. We didn't hear nothing till we got about, well, we come through Wilsland. And we said to him there, "What the bloody hell have you been doing? Why did you get like that? How did you get on the tender?" He said, "Well," he said, "we had a few beers," he said. He said, "I decided to get up on the wrong side at crew." So not on the platform side, the wrong side. He got on the crew and climbed onto the tender.
But why? I don't understand why he wanted to get on.
No, this was a bet he had with his mates. He said, "You're going to ride on the back of the tender, you see." He got on the back of the tender, got down what they call the palm stays, the tubes, like, they were the overflow pipes. He got in the corner, because every time we picked up water, they overfilled, you see, and he got bloody drowned in it, you see. So the third time, and then he managed to get over the top. I said, "How the bloody hell are you going to get killed by the overhead? Everything, you know, tunnels and everything." "Oh, God, down," he said, and everything. And then when we got to Euston there, we pounded him out, and he said, "How am I going to?" I said, "Well, if the bloody your police, I'll get all the hostage, they're bloody annihilate you," he said. and all that. He said, I said, well, you get down the side of the track with your old stuff we've given you and a pack. I said, you walk down as though you're a plate layer. So he said, okay, boy. Well, when his mates come up, he said, where's that? We've lost our mate. I said, no, he's not. He looked, I said, he's walking down the track there. What is it? I said, he clammed on the back of the tender. When we told them, they said, oh, they had a whip round. We got a five. Them big fivers, had, like, we had loads of money, they did. So we had a five each, you know. But that was the situation. That was the ghost ride, you know.
Yeah, it must have been quite funny, though, getting that scream from the back of the tender.
Oh, bloody frightening. When I would see a body in the bloody tender, I thought, how the bloody hell has he got there?
So what was it like then when you were working during the night and during the Blitz when they were dropping bombs?
Well, it was either go into an air raid shelter or you carried on if you was in the loco department. Well, you had to find the best place there was to get it, like get in the engine pit, like you see, if it was bombing. There wasn't a lot of bombing. There was a lot of incendiaries, like, and we had a bomb dropped in Gloucester Avenue. And that was a funny sort of thing, because we heard the fire engine, it went flying away, it stopped. What happened? The sirens went all clear. And when we went down the road there, past Dumpton Place, down the road, there was a bloody great crater, and there was a fire engine in the crater. I walked from Euston up the track to the shed, and the war was on, right, and I've got my steel helmet on, and and of course, the next minute I heard bing like that, and just a little small dent. It was a shrapnel out of your own guns. Well, they were, you could see it firing, because at Primrose Hill they had four 4.5 guns. We always used to say, them bloody guns, they never do any fire. Then there was a big air raid, then all of a sudden they opened up. My father was in the Home Guard, but he was on the rockets. So he was at Parliament Hill Fields, and so they opened up, we counted all night long, 600 rounds they fired, and they got a Junkers, and it fell over Charing Cross. They shot him down, didn't they? So that was what they said.
But you were hit on the head by a piece of shrapnel from one of our own British guns, that's what you're saying?
No, that was the only one that hit me helmet here. That was, well, it was a shrapnel from our shells, like, and one went, bing! You know, not bloody hell, you know.
Did many people get killed then in your street in Gloucester Avenue?
Yes, there was quite a few, yeah. We lost a lot of friends. One of the regular jobs we did with my driver, Jock Robinson, we used to have a Black 5, and we worked the 8:30 out of Euston to, it was a Birmingham train, but we used to get relieved at Rugby, and then we waited there to make a return trip with a parcel train with a compound, a Midland compound on, you see. So we waited there and waited there. We waited there because then you got control there, and they said, the train's running late. We waited and waited. We waited about an hour. Well, when it came in, the fireman gets off. He says, we're in trouble. He said, they said, the fire, you see. Couldn't make any steam, like, you see. And when we looked in the firebox, I thought, Jesus Christ, it was blue and it was everything. I said, the state of this body, hell, lad. He said, the thing is, so the guard came up and he said, what are you doing, mate? He said, we've had trouble all the way. He said, we've been stopping and starting like that. Jock said to me there, what do you think, Ali? I said, well, I'll get down and have a look at the ash pan, you see. So I got the old rake, opened the damper, and I couldn't see anything, couldn't see no fire bars at all. So I shouted out to him, and I said, can you rake up the top? I said, what we'll do, I said, we'll completely take the whatever, all the ashes out of there. I said, build a fire up in the corner so we got fire to go in. And we had about £80 on the clock, you see. So I said, we've got half a glass. He said, yes, okay. So I said, well, I'll get down and rake out downstairs. Well, he done the raking at the top, took a couple of fire bars out, we raked all the ash. In fact, we raked the ash, and he said, I can't get much ash out of this. I think, how are you getting on? I said, I don't know. And I got in there, and I'm raking the rake there. Then after about 50 rakes there, I suddenly see the fire bars. I said, Jock, I said, we're full of bloody clinker. So he said, that's it. He says, what it is. He got a fire over in the corner, big fire lot, which about got it all cleared, like all the fire bars cleared, put a fire there. So we know we've got a fire to start to bake it all over. You see, when we talk. This was half the bloody bother. The people, the crew, they relieved some other crew. And they said, oh, yeah, he said, oh, it's a bloody coal and all like this business.
And it was really the clinker, it had clinkered
up. Oh, bloody, it got no, you can't get no air through. And it was, well, it was clinkered up. Because you see, if you get the fire, you have it red hot, white hot. And if it goes blue, you're in trouble. You see, you're blocked. Everything, all the air passages are blocked. No good having a damper there because it has it blowing the, you know, when it, from the damper, the wind blows up. Gets a fire going, doesn't it? I rake the fire ash pan out. The station master come up and said, how are you doing? I said, well, we're having it. Good gracious, he said. When we took all the ash out, and the senior port came down, he said, well, how are you getting on? Jesus Christ, he said. We got about half a ton of bloody clink all on the track, you see. I said, well, this is it. So we cleared the ash pan out as best as we could. So we started the fire, built a fire. That took about half an hour getting the fire up there and like that. The coal itself was in the tender. It was about half full. So we had about, I should say, 4 ton we had in a coal. So we thought, well, we got enough there. And so that was it. So we brought the coal forward and then built the fire up. And then, we started smoking, didn't we? And then looked at the old gauge glass and it started coming round. And I said, Jock, hold that, we'll be all right in a minute. So the guard come up, how are we doing? I said, well, I said, it was on 180, 120 pounds, and we got down to about 100 pounds in the boiler. So I said, it's coming up now. We've got 180. I said, by the time in a minute there, we should have about 200. Good, he said, that's lovely. Well, that took, we was about an hour and a quarter late. And we went to Euston, no problem. We were doing about 75 miles an hour. A compound, you start off with three cylinders, and then if you get up speed, and then you get on a flat, you've got regulator only halfway, but then regulator goes right over, then you're in compound, you're running on a one cylinder then, so you're really nipping along, wop, 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 you know, and yeah, so we got in there, and so we, the guy came up and said, bloody hell, mate, he said, that's the fast we've been, he said, it come from Birmingham, like, and he said, they had trouble all the way, he said, oh, Jesus Christ, he said. Thing we had when we cooked on at Euston, the guards used to come up to you like, hello mate, he said, how are you doing, gentlemen? You know, lovely, you've got 550 tons or whatever you want on, you're 16 coaches. He said, hope you have a pleasant trip. Now you keep lads, all right, yeah, and that's it. And off you go, you see. There was this one guard though that was very pompous, butterfly collar, eggshells on it, and he did look smart, you know, come up and did. Good afternoon, or good morning, gentlemen. I'm your guard, he said. We've got 16 on. I hope you have a pleasant trip. All the best, gentlemen. And he said, I hope you have a very good time. Thank you very much. And we used to stand on the footplate and say, oh, hello, we've got 550 ton. And we did all that, you know. We took the rise out of him.
And you and the rest of the crews called him what?
The guard. And as he went away, you see, we used to mimic him. Then in 1947, we worked a freight train to Watford. We got relieved there, and we booked off at Northampton. And then I said to me mate, I'm going to go out for a walk. So I took all my overalls off and everything, and then put a nice coat on. And then I walked along to Beckett's Park, like, and there was this young lady there, seated there, and she was saying to her, oh, look, Trixie, come back, come back. This was her dog. Well, I went, come on back, you know, because the whole thing turned around, looked at me, Terry, like, and he looked, and he came one back, you see. And then she said, well, thank you very much. That is nice of you. And I looked at her and I thought, cool, lummy. So I said to her, well, we got talking. We had a walk, like, with a dog. And she said, well, that is nice of you. Like, she said, oh, you work on the railway? I said, yes, yes. She said, my dad works on the railway. I said, oh, lovely. And that was it, you see. And I said to her, well, is there any chance of meeting you? I said, I live in London. But I said, I work at Watford. Now, I said, if I get time off, I said, and I wrote her a letter card every day, and it was so serious, you see. So I courted her Oh, and we really got lovey-dovey, you see, and no sex before marriage on them days. It was properly done, you see. And she said, come and meet Dad. They want to meet you, right? I said, oh, yeah. She said, well, she said, it's 6 months, isn't it? So, and I sat there in the living room, and then I see this old gentleman come by with a trilby hat riding a bicycle, and I thought, well, this must be her father, you know, and I didn't realise then, and I sat there and all of a sudden heard a little bit of talking, and then he come like, and she said, he's in here, Dad, you know, so and he come in, and he said, howdy-do, and I thought to myself, bloody hell, they had been ribbing me at the thing, because I said I was going to see my future father-in-law, and they said, who is he? I said, he's a Northampton man. And she's a guard. So they were saying, yeah, I wonder who that bloody hell is, you know, and like that. So it went on. And I looked at him, and I thought to myself, I said, hello, Mr. Maycock. Shook his hand. He said, pleased to meet you. I said, you're a guard, are you? And then he took his hat off. And I said to him, I said, hello, Mr. Maycock. I said, you're the guard, aren't you? He said, yes, he said, I thought I recognised you. He said, well, he said, nice, you meet me now, haven't you? I said, yes. He said, well, you behave yourself, he said. Now, he said, when you know that I'm a guardian and I feel proud of it, he said. Then when he started letting me know, he said, I'm a union man. He said, I represent the NUR and all this. And I thought, oh, lovely, this is a different guard. So when I got back to the barracks, my mate said, go on, tell us who he is. I said, It's Mr. And they go, Mr. Maycock. Oh, Fred Maycock, he's his bloody father-in-law, you see. They said he's in for it. Watch him now. So that was it.